More than 5 months into the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza, the Israeli regime continues its campaign of killing, destruction, and starvation against Palestinians. UN organizations issue fresh stark warnings about the growing levels of child malnutrition and infectious diseases in the Gaza Strip. Israeli media reports widespread blackouts in northern Israel following another rocket attack by Lebanon's Hezbollah. I'm Behrouz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says the people made a great move by participating in Friday's elections, despite the enemy plots. Ayatollah Khamenei thanked the Iranians for taking part in the vote to choose members of parliament and the assembly of experts. He said that the enemies tried to dissuade the people from participating in the electoral process, but the people made an epic move by performing their social and cultural duties. The leader also thanked all those who were involved in the successful conclusion of the elections. Final results have already been out. In the race to the 290-seat parliament, 231 candidates have been declared winner. 72 contenders also grabbed seats in the 88-member Assembly of Experts. A second round of voting will be held in April to determine the fate of the rest of the seats in the two bodies. Now, more than 5 months into the Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, dozens of more people have lost their lives in overnight air raids. In the latest attack, the regime warplanes struck the Jabalia refugee camp in Gaza City, killing 8 people and wounding several more. A number of homes were also targeted in the southern cities of Khan Yunis and Rafah, resulting in the death of nearly 30 people. The regime's naval forces also shelled the shores of Beit Lahia in the north. No casualties have been reported. IOF troops also once again opened fire on Palestinians trying to reach an aid truck in Gaza City, injuring several of them. The death toll from the onslaught on Gaza since early October has surpassed 30,600, mostly women and children. United Nations organizations warning that child malnutrition levels in northern Gaza are particularly extreme. A WHO representative told a meeting in Geneva that 1 in 6 children under the age of 2 are acutely malnourished in northern Gaza. Rick Pieperkin said that an estimated 8,000 patients need to be evacuated from the strip where most hospitals have been repeatedly targeted by the Israeli regime. Also, UNICEF spokesperson James Elder told the meeting that malnutrition rates for children under 5 in northern Gaza are extremely high. He said there is also a growing risk from infectious diseases, with 9 in 10 children under the age of 5 falling sick over the last weeks. Israeli media reporting a widening rift among members of the far-right Israeli cabinet and the military about growing sentiment against Prime Minister Netanyahu's policies. The Israeli military's disagreements with ministers reached a new level in cabinet sessions. In a recent meeting, several ministers protested at the military chief, saying that the IOF ground operation in Gaza is not effective enough and it's too slow. In the meeting, Herzi Halevi, however, reminded his opponents about their initial refusal to start a ground operation. Now, this as Benny Gantz, a war cabinet member, is in Washington to meet with U.S. officials without the prime minister's permission. Gantz, a key political rival of Netanyahu, has faced backlash over the trip. He was not even facilitated by the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have laid to rest the body of a young boy who was killed in the latest Israeli attack near the city of Annapolis. The 10-year-old victim was shot in the head in the town of Burin, south of Annapolis. Regime incursion into the town also left 2 other people injured. Another Palestinian youth was killed in the town of Hawara, south of Annapolis. Israeli atrocities have surged across the West Bank, parallel to its bloody onslaught on Gaza. Hundreds of Palestinians have been killed and thousands more injured in near daily raids on the occupied territory since early October last year. Earlier, we were joined by our Ramallah correspondent, Mona Kandil. She has some details on the latest Israeli raids across the West Bank.
This morning, the Israeli forces raided the village of Kobar, northwest Ramallah. and unfortunately detained a number of Palestinians. The majority of those Palestinians were former prisoners. Among those who had been detained, there is the wife of Nail al-Barghouthi, Aman Nafa. Nail al-Barghouthi, the longest-serving Palestinian prisoner in Israeli jails, and she also was a former prisoner, and his sister Hanan al-Barghouthi, who had been released in the Swapda deal that was reached between the resistance group and the Israeli authorities when the Israeli war on the Gaza Strip started, and it's weird why the Israelis recently had been again rearresting those who had been released in the swap deal. The Israeli forces also stormed Qalandia refugee camp. Yesterday, the Israelis raided Qalandia refugee camp and a Palestinian was shot and killed during the operation. Again, today, the Israelis raided Qalandia refugee camp, and it seems that they insist to find those Palestinians who had been using their weapons during the military operation, because yesterday two Israeli soldiers were wounded during the military operation, and exchange of fire have taken place between Palestinians from inside the refugee camp and the Israeli forces. Today, a number of Palestinians had been detained during the military operation to Qalandia refugee camp in Nablus. And as usual, the Israeli forces used excessive force. They used their guns to disperse the people. A 10-year-old Palestinian was shot and killed, Amr al-Najjar, from the village of Burin, South Nablus. This child was shot in the head and immediately he was killed. Two more Palestinians were wounded during the military operation to Burin.
Now, Israeli media has reported widespread blackouts in the northern parts of the occupied territories following another rocket attack by Lebanon's Hezbollah. A barrage of rockets was fired at more than a dozen settlements and military bases in several towns, one of them hitting a utility pole. That prompted the Israeli officials to activate anti-missile systems that failed to intercept some of the rockets. The regime has refrained from revealing the severity of damage and a number of towns that plunge into darkness. Hezbollah's operations came in response to Israel's repeated attacks against southern Lebanon. Hezbollah and Israel have been engaged in exchanges of fire since the regime began its genocidal war on Gaza. Lebanese resistance fighters have mainly targeted Israeli military positions, but the Tel Aviv regime has even targeted residential areas in Lebanon, causing the death of a number of civilians. Iran's foreign minister has called on the Organization of Islamic Cooperation to take more effective action to help put an end to the Israeli brutal genocide of Palestinians. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made a call in a meeting with OIC's Secretary General in the Saudi Arabian city of Jeddah. That's where an emergency meeting of the Organization of on Gaza is being held. Amir Abdullahian also told the OIC chief that the organization's members must make major decisions and send a strong message to Israel and its allies and deter further atrocities. In a meeting with Saudi Foreign Minister Faisal bin Farhan, Amir Abdullahian called for more efforts to help Gaza and to stop the Israeli genocide. The Saudi minister stressed the importance of collective efforts by Muslim nations in the international arena to support Palestinians. British politician and lawmaker George Galloway has warned about a current state of the UK, saying that the country is at a very dangerous crossroads.
I think that we stand at a very dangerous crossroads in our country's affairs, perhaps as dangerous as any since the summer and autumn of 1940-41, and there's no Mr. Churchill in this picture. There's no one, it seems, able to step forward and steady the ship of state and begin to rally, unite our people to face what is a very difficult future. Poverty stalks the land, child poverty in particular.
Galloway made those comments after being sworn in as an MP following his by-election victory in Rochdale. He said his job was to make Rochdale great again. He ran a campaign focused on stopping the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. The British political scene is undergoing profound changes marked by legal disputes and a significant decline in public support for the ruling Conservative Party, an Ipsos poll indicating that support for the Conservatives, who have been in power for 14 years, was at 20% at the end of February. So let's bring in Saeed Pourreza from London. Saeed, good to have you with us. So tell us how this happened and on what ticket George Galloway made his way back to the British Parliament again.
Well, it all started, of course, in the by-elections in Rochdale, a constituency in the greater Manchester area. He ran, of course, on the ticket to advocate for Palestinians once elected into the parliament. Of course, the by-elections, you recall, was triggered by the death of the sitting MP, Andy, who was, of course, taken over by a Labour candidate by the name of Azhar Ali. He was, of course, found in a leaked audio to have espoused quote-unquote conspiracy theories about Israel regarding the Hamas resistance movement's attack on October 7th last year. That, of course, paved the way for independent candidates and for George Galloway of Britain's Workers' Party with the promise of advocating for Palestinians. And, of course, he dealt with local issues, the so-called bread and butter issues important to the population in Rochdale. And as we saw, he won a thumping victory of more than 12,000 votes, which was indeed more votes than all the rest of the candidates put together. And he was sworn in, of course, into the British Parliament. This absolutely very divisive times. A lot of divisions in across the different political parties and within them as well. As you mentioned, the Conservatives are really flagging in the polls. The Labour Party, the opposition Labour Party also, that enjoys a lead over the Conservatives, have lost quite a few points in the polls as far as the Muslim vote is concerned. And the reason is obvious, which is, of course, their initial absolute support for the Israeli regime. And later on, under massive pressure from weekend after weekend of national demonstrations, a change in their approach, which got to a point where they started calling for an immediate humanitarian pause, not exactly a ceasefire, as we saw two attempts in the parliament to vote for an immediate ceasefire brought forth by the Scottish Nationalist Party, National Party, both of which failed to garner enough support for that motion to pass. The second time, of course, the Speaker of the House, Lindsay Hoyle, played what many call some kind of a trick, which was to adopt the Labour amendment to the SNP motion, which was voted on. Of course, pressure on the member of the Labour Party to abstain as well. That didn't pass either. As I say, these are critical times in British politics. It's a country, a society that is very much divided on the way the UK has reacted to the ongoing massacre in the Gaza Strip. As we speak, 66% of people in Britain want an immediate ceasefire. And that, of course, has fallen on deaf ears in the corridors of power in Westminster. And when people have spoken with their votes at the ballot box, case in point in Rochdale, then you hear comments from the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, warning that Mr. Galloway's election to the parliament was alarming. That, of course, has caused a lot of waves and has prompted reactions from Mr. Galloway as well, who called Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister, and Keir Starmer, the Labour Party leader. We've heard that expression as two cheeks of the same backside, meaning, of course, that they are more or less the same. There are others who are saying that with Galloway's return to Parliament will come leftist politics, a true left in the British Parliament, to pile the pressure, to bring pressure to bear on the so-called liberals and, of course, on the Conservative Party, which, of course, is something we'll have to wait and see come the first PMQs, which is tomorrow, Wednesday, the Prime Minister's questions. We'll see the first salvo across the bow of both political major political parties from Mr. Galloway when that happens, as I say, which is tomorrow. And, of course, a host of other issues, very many divisions. For example, the way that the immigrants have been treated, the so-called Rwanda plan espoused by the Conservative Party, and, of course, not a very different plan from the Labour Party either. That, too, will be an issue that will be something that George Galloway and the likes of him will be putting to the biggest political parties in Parliament when his parliamentary career as an MP for the seventh time, of course, commences.
Okay, so we should be expecting some more heated debates there in the House. Thanks for that. Saeed Pourreza, my colleague in our London bureau. Iran's Al Alam Arabic News Network has been once again targeted by censorship on Western social media platforms. Social networks such as X, formerly known as Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram, have taken down all Al Alam accounts. YouTube deleted network's channel on Google without any explanation, and that's contrary to the usual procedure of sending a warning and a possibility of protesting via email. That's not the first time Al Alam's social media pages have been blocked. In 2020, Facebook also removed the channel's verified page with more than 7 million followers. Al Alam has been at the forefront of reporting Israeli crimes against the people of Gaza. And with that, we come to the end of this newscast. Thank you for being with us.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
Despite court ruling, the Zionist regime continued to kill and cause harm in Gaza, blocked aid entry, and allowed officials to incite against Palestinians. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, it has now been more than 1 month since the International Court of Justice, ICJ, delivered an interim ruling calling on the Zionist regime to take measures to prevent acts of genocide in Gaza. The provisional measures were announced on January 26th, weeks after South Africa had taken the Zionist regime to the Hague-based court over accusation of genocide against Palestinians. The court did not order Israel to hold its military operations in Gaza, one of South Africa's demands. It also did not rule on whether the Zionist regime was committing genocide and will likely not to do so for some time. However, it did rule on several provisional measures voted for by the vast majority of the court's 17 judges. It ordered the Zionist regime to take measures to prevent acts that fall under Article 2 of the Genocide Convention, namely killing members of a particular group, causing serious bodily or mental harm, deliberately bringing about the physical destruction of the group, and imposing measures intended to prevent births. The court also ordered the Zionist regime to enable the provision of urgent humanitarian aid, prevent the destruction of evidence of crimes, and to prevent and punish incitement to commit genocide against Palestinians. In addition, it commanded the Zionist regime to submit a report within a month outlining all measures it had taken to follow the ICJ's orders. Israel submitted a report earlier this week. Over the past month, actions taken by the child killer regime of Israel in Gaza appear to defy several of the provisional measures. Middle East Eye takes a look at this issue. The court instructed the Zionist regime to take all measures to prevent killing Palestinians in Gaza as part of its obligations under the Genocide Convention. However, Palestinian civilians were killed every day in the first 2 weeks following the ICJ ruling, according to an investigation by Air Wars. Between January 27th and February 9th, Air Wars monitored more than 200 incidents of harm. In 190 incidents, civilians were killed or wounded by explosive weapons, while civilians were killed or wounded by live gunfire in 36 accidents. Among those civilians killed were healthcare workers, journalists, people waiting for humanitarian aid, and those sheltering in education centers. In 13 separate incidents, 10 or more civilians were killed. The killing of Palestinian civilians continued beyond the first 2 weeks since the ruling. On February 10th, Hend Rajab, a 5-year-old Palestinian girl, was found dead nearly 2 weeks after she had been trapped in a car with her dead family and surrounded by Israeli regime forces. 3 days later, 67 Palestinians were killed during an Israeli regime assault on Rafah. The attack targeted 14 homes and 3 mosques. And survivors told Middle East Eye they were shot at by Israeli regime quadcopters while sheltering inside displacement tents. On February 14th, the Zionist regime troops reportedly shot dead a Palestinian man after sending him into Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis to warn others to evacuate. A week later, 40 people were killed and more than 100 wounded after what Palestinian officials described as a heinous massacre in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. The Zionist regime warplanes hit 4 homes in the area, killing mostly women and children. On February 29th, at least 115 Palestinians were killed and hundreds more injured after Israeli regime forces opened fire on people waiting to collect food from an aid envoy in Gaza City. The ICJ ruling also ordered the Zionist regime to take all measures to prevent actions that cause bodily or mental harm to Palestinians in Gaza. In addition to Israeli regime attacks, which have killed and wounded, there have been several reports of mental and physical harm towards Palestinians that either took place or have come to light since January 26th. Just 3 days after the ICJ ruling, Middle East Eye reported that Palestinians fleeing Khan Yunis through a supposedly safe corridor were being detained, humiliated and taken to unknown locations by the Zionist regime's military. Eyewitnesses said civilians were searched and questioned by Israeli regime investigators and had their iris data recorded at a checkpoint. Some were put into trucks and taken to detention camps, where they were held in unknown conditions. And on January 30, a video was shared on a far-right Israeli Telegram channel, appearing to show the Zionist regime troops coercing detained Palestinians to describe themselves as slaves. On February 4th, a Palestinian doctor said Israeli regime forces subjected him to abuse during 45 days of captivity, including sleep deprivation, constant shackling, and being blindfolded. Dr. Saeed Abdulrahman Ma'ruf was working at Al-Ahli Al-Arab Hospital in Gaza City when he was surrounded by Israeli regime forces in December. He said his hands were cuffed, legs shackled, and eyes masked for nearly 7 weeks of imprisonment, and that he was made to sleep on pebbles with loud music blaring. Ma'ruf lost 25 kilograms during that time. On February 5th, an undated image emerged of an Israeli regime troop in Gaza City, towering over a Palestinian man, who is stripped naked with his hands tied behind his back and blood pouring from a wound in his leg. And on February 19th, UN experts expressed alarm over allegations of rape, sexual assault, arbitrary detention, and other egregious human rights violations against women and girls in Gaza and the West Bank since the Zionist regime's war began. The independent experts said it received reports of Palestinian female detainees being subjected to multiple forms of assault, with at least two detainees reportedly raped, while others were allegedly threatened with rape and sexual violence. There was at least one report of a woman in Gaza allegedly being held in a cage in rain and cold without food. Last week, a Palestinian man abducted by Israeli regime forces from Gaza told Middle East Eye he was physically and psychologically tortured for weeks. Ali Hamdan was abducted in December from Jabalia, north of Gaza City, after his home had been bombed in earlier airstrikes, which killed his wife, daughters, and son-in-law. He said, "For over 42 days, my hands were tied and I was blindfolded. From 5 a.m. till 11 p.m., we were forced to sit in a specific position, and if you didn't follow orders, they beat you and put you in a stress position. We were stripped down to our boxers in the cold, and they did not care about the sick and the elderly, including people who were aged 75 or older." The Zionist regime was ordered by the ICJ to take measures to prevent deliberately inflicting conditions on Palestinians that are calculated to bring about the physical destruction of the community, in whole or in part. In addition, it was told to avoid measures intended to prevent births in Gaza. In the past month, international agencies and rights organizations have pointed out that several Israeli actions have led to such destructive conditions. Just this week, the UN's leading expert on food aid said the Zionist regime was intentionally starving Palestinians and should consequently be held accountable for war crimes. Michael Fakhri, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Food, told The Guardian, "There is no reason to intentionally block the passage of humanitarian aid or intentionally obliterate small-scale fishing vessels, greenhouses, and orchards in Gaza, other than to deny people access to food. Intentionally depriving people of food is clearly a war crime. Israel has announced its intention to destroy the Palestinian people in whole or in part simply for being Palestinian. In recent days, two babies have died of malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza, with several rights groups accusing the Zionist regime of using starvation as a weapon of war. Some Palestinian parents have been forced to use animal fodder to satisfy their children's hunger.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This hadith is from Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, and he says this. I'm going to recite the Arabic of it. We all learn the hadith together. إِنَّ الْقُرْآنَ حَيٌّ لَا يَمُوتُ. Truly, verily, the Qur'an is alive and it does not die. وَالْآيَا حَيَّا. Every verse of the Qur'an is alive. لَا تَمُوتُ. Doesn't die. Then he says this. If the Qur'an was limited, if it was just talking about Rasulullah, it was just talking about Khandaq, right? He says this. فَلَوْ كَانَتِ الْآيَةِ. If the ayat were like this. إِذَا نَزَلَتْ فِي الْأَقْوَامِ. It was revealed about certain people. It was revealed about the Qawm of Thamud, Fir'aun, right? It was revealed about people. Matu, they died. مَاتَتِ الْآيَةِ. And then the ayah didn't apply anymore. There's no Fir'aun anymore. He says, if that was the case, لَمَاتَ الْقُرْآنِ. The Qur'an will be dead. The Qur'an's not dead. It applies now. We look for the Prophet Muhammad of the time, the Rasul of the time, the Amir al-Mu'mineen of the time, the Fir'aun of the time, the Yazid of the time. The names change, but the line of Yazid is still the same. The line of Hussein is still the same. Right? So now, you and I remember back to when we heard from the leader. He told us. He said that those who made bay'ah to Imam Khomeini have made bay'ah with Rasulullah. No, Imam Khomeini is not Rasulullah, but the line of Rasulullah. The ayah is alive. Quran is alive. You're also living in a time of victory, where the side of Islam is so strong now. And of course, that we never rely on ourselves. We never forget the Battle of Hunain. In the Battle of Hunain, we started thinking, we're strong, we're powerful, we can do everything. And God showed us what happens if we think it's us. We're talking about God, the work of God. What happens if we do our part? The side of Islam is so strong right now. The idea that people have embraced these ayat of the Quran, and now they've become invincible. Right? There's an ayat of Quran I'd like to share with brothers and sisters. This is in Surah Fath, so Surah 48. Surah 48 and verse number 10. Why is it that you and I were so happy God has favored us with being the sons and daughters of Imam Khomeini? Surah 48, 10. Let's see if I got it right. Inna alladhina, truly those, inna alladhina, yubayi'unaka, they've made bay'ah to you. Innama, they have only, yubayi'una Allah. Whoever made bay'ah to you, whoever can find the Hussein of the time, whoever can avoid the Yazid of the time, who can stand in the camp of Amir al-Mu'mineen. He says, inna alladhina yubayi'unaka, those who've made bay'ah to, innama yubayi'una Allah. Yadullah fawqa aydihim. The hand of God is over their hand. As long as the believers stay resisting, fighting, pushing. We're not worried about what the enemies of Islam do. Now, again, with these verses, we're looking not only on our social and political responsibilities, but we're always trying to look inward. Is there anything we need to do? Any improvement we need to make? Not pointing fingers, ourselves. Myself as a speaker, yourselves as the listener. So we're going to go back to our verse again about taqwa, right? There's a sign of taqwa. What was the sign of taqwa? وَعَتِيُوا اللَّهَ وَالرَّسُولُ. Obey Allah and the Prophet and the Messenger. لَعَلَّكُمْ تُرْحَمُونَ. Maybe Allah will show mercy. Now when you're looking at ourselves, there's a fallacy that exists and it's widespread. There are some people who think this way. They say, you know what? I don't do my responsibility. I don't honor my Islamic commitments. I don't do everything that God says. I don't push. Right? But you know what? God's in my corner. I still have one hope. You know what my hope is? The rahmah of Allah. I don't do my job. I don't pray. I don't fast. I don't fight my enemies. I don't stand up against the tawaghit. But you know what? Allah is arhamur rahimin. I'm not going to do my job. I'm expecting miracles. This happens to many people. Instead of me doing my responsibility, I see the rahmah of Allah as a replacement for me doing my job. I don't do my job. I don't do my responsibility. But God will. If this happens to a nation, I'm not going to do my responsibility. The opposite way is so powerful, the way that of Islam, the Islam is teaching us, right? But that way that I sit back, I don't do my job, and I'm going to expect a miracle to happen, right? Another story, inshallah, that's not true. They said once this Christian preacher, he was a good man, but one Sunday he decided instead of going to service, he would go bear hunting. He went out and he went bear hunting and he was out there with his rifle and he bumped into a grizzly and unfortunately his rifle fell and he tumbled and started rolling down the hill and that bear was coming right after him. So what did he do? He said, oh God, please give me another chance. Oh God, make that bear a Christian. And the bear stopped just before it was about to eat him and it raised his hands and said, oh Lord, bless this food I'm about to have. Amen. We wouldn't do that for the dunya. A logical person, a rational person. I'm not going to do my job. I sit down and, right? We wouldn't expect. I don't go to work, but how come we don't use the same logic? I don't go to work. I don't do my job. I don't sign make a resume. I don't drive my car safely, and I expect the rahmah of Allah. Why, if that doesn't make sense, why would it make sense with Islam? If it's a logical argument, you're a rational human being, why would it make sense with Islam? So the powerful way of thinking is the way that Islam has organized for us, right? That you do your responsibility. You push as hard as you can. You try, right? And then after that, then maybe Allah will show mercy. Maybe a miracle will happen. I expect, but I push. Right? So that's the Quranic way. Now, back to the question though, another question. God, he just said, obey Allah and the Messenger. He didn't say, obey in what? Right? The answer is, it doesn't matter. Whatever God said, right? We're going to look at another verse of Quran. Again, this verse is very powerful, right? This one is in Surah Nisa, right? So it's Surah 4, and it's verse number 65. God is going to describe the mu'mineen, right? So a little Quranic story for us. The believers are like this, because God, he uses this term only once in the Quran. He swears by himself, فَلَا وَرَبِّكْ, right? He swears by himself. They do not believe until they come to this last part of the verse, right? So one, the believers, you can just look at the English part of it, because I'm going to look at the Arabic in the end. The English part of it is that they submit, they make the prophet the judge, whatever Islam says, I don't have an opinion. But then after that, once God's spoken, once Islam has a ruling, then what? God now looks at the heart of the mu'min, ayat of Quran. last part of the verse. Thumma. After they made Allah as the judge, after God has spoken. Thumma. Then. La yajidu. They do not find. Fi anfusihim. In their heart of hearts, in their soul, in their nafs. Fi anfusihim. Harajam mimma qadayt. Any sort of difficulty, any sort of disagreement. I don't like what God said. Harajam mimma qadayt. From the decision that you've made, the ruling that you've made. Wa yusallimu taslima. And they submit a thorough submitting. Otherwise, the first part of the verse says, فَلَا وَرَبِّكَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ. They do not believe unless there's absolute submission.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Like all other EU states, Ireland and Spain have already accommodated the genocide by portraying it as an act of self-defense. Failure to impose sanctions on the Zionist regime will mean they are accommodating the genocide even further. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Ursula von der Leyen sees genocide as a business opportunity. Just this week, the European Commission president argued that a new mindset is required to bolster the weapons industry. She said, the continuing war in Gaza and the larger-scale destabilization in the Middle East point to an era of insecurity and conflict in the region and beyond. The comment on Palestine in a speech about assisting arms makers prompts an unavoidable conclusion. Von der Leyen is exploiting the crisis to urge greater militarization. It must never be forgotten that von der Leyen offered her full backing to the Zionist regime's current war on Gaza as soon as it was declared. While she may be choosing her words more carefully these days, the institution which she heads remains depraved. On February 15th, Dmitry Tezantchev, The European Union's ambassador in Tel Aviv tweeted that he had a good meeting with Roy Fisher, who had just taken up a new senior-level post in the Zionist regime's economy ministry. Following a Freedom of Information request, it was confirmed that the meeting was arranged by trade officials working for the European Commission, the EU's executive. Less than 3 weeks earlier, the same European Commission had signaled that it was taking seriously the order which the International Court of Justice delivered to Israel. The European Commission expected the full, immediate, and effective implementation of the court's provisional measures. The measures included a demand that the Zionist regime stop killing Palestinians in Gaza. The Zionist regime has not respected those measures, all of them aimed at halting or preventing genocide. And yet the European Commission has been exploring ways to strengthen its economic relations with the Zionist regime at a time when it is perpetrating genocide, widely regarded as the worst crime against humanity. In his February 15th tweet, Dmitry Tezantchev commended legislation known as What is Good for Europe is Good for Israel. The aim of that bill is to cut the number of inspections at ports in Israel of goods already approved by the EU. The phrase, What is good for Europe is good for Israel, was uttered by Benjamin Netanyahu in May last year. Netanyahu was celebrating how the French supermarket chain Carrefour had entered the Israeli market, and red tape is being removed. Goods on Carrefour's shelves will not need to pass the unnecessary bureaucratic impediment of receiving an Israeli standard, the Prime Minister said. Carrefour has subsequently boasted that it donated thousands of personal shipments to Israel's troops. The firm has even expressed pride in contributing to the Zionist regime's national effort, a euphemism for the Gaza genocide. The investments by Carrefour that excited Netanyahu involved a deal between the French corporation and the Zionist regime's retail chain Yenot Biton. Under it, Carrefour is taking over Yenot Biton's network of stores, some located within the Zionist regime settlements in the occupied West Bank. The construction and expansion of those settlements are war crimes under the Fourth Geneva Convention. By seeking greater trade with the child killer regime of Israel, the European Union is implicitly approving efforts to profit from war crimes. Ursula von der Leyen must bear responsibility for the constant caressing of the child killer regime of Israel by the European Commission. She does not act in a vacuum. Josep Borrell, the EU's foreign policy chief, alleged recently that von der Leyen was not representing anyone but herself when she sided completely with Israel in October. Despite lately seeking restraint, Borrell himself expressed solidarity with the Zionist regime in the initial stages of the genocide, and the EU's 27 governments, without exception, effectively gave the Zionist regime carte blanche to destroy Gaza in October by dishonestly portraying the war as an act of self-defense. Months later, there is still no real appetite for holding the child killer regime of Israel to account among EU leaders. Spain and Ireland are the only two EU countries to formally seek an urgent review of the association agreement with the Zionist regime amid the Gaza genocide. That agreement, covering economic and political cooperation, is conditional on respect for human rights. Ireland's Senate voted unanimously recently for a ban on goods from Israel settlements in the West Bank. Such a ban had already been won majority approval in the Senate and the other house in the Oireachtas, Ireland's parliament, yet was blocked from coming into effect by the Dublin government on the disputed pretext that the EU would not allow such a step. Surely, it is time for Ireland and Spain to go beyond timid requests. If they cannot convince their EU partners to take action, then they should do so without approval from Brussels. Like all other EU states, Ireland and Spain have already accommodated the genocide by portraying it as an act of self-defense. Failure to impose sanctions on the child killer regime of Israel will mean they are accommodating the genocide even further.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a large number of women from across the country. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on December 27, 2023, a week before the birth anniversary of Lady Fatimatu Zahra, peace be upon her. This day is celebrated as Women's Day in Iran. There are two important points according to Islam's view. Women are free to be active in all fields, such as being active in society and politics, etc. However, this should take place while remembering two important points, which Islam is sensitive about. The first is the issue of the family, which I mentioned. The second is the potential dangers associated with sexual attraction. The danger of sexual attraction. Islam is sensitive about this. Islam forbids us from preparing the environment and atmosphere in such a way that it will be a place for going astray due to sexual attraction, which is one of the most dangerous areas where one may go astray, because this can lead to problems for both women and men. We need to be vigilant about this, and this is where hijab comes into play. The issue of a hijab is one of the things that can limit the danger of sexual attraction. That is why Islam emphasizes the issue of hijab. The issue of hijab is mentioned in two places in Surah Al-Ahzab. When you ask his womenfolk for something, do so from behind a curtain. Quran chapter 33, verse 53.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Those who went to the Prophet's house, for example, let's say they were guests and they wanted to receive some food. It wasn't right for them to come face to face with the Prophet's wife. Rather, they were to take the food from behind a curtain. That is, this has been taken into consideration. This same meaning is also seen in another verse of Surah Al-Ahzab. Therefore, these two concerns need to be taken into account. The issue of hijab should be observed in the true sense of the word, and the issue of the family, a woman's presence in her home, and her role as a mother, which is the most important role, should be taken into account. Perhaps I can say that motherhood is the most important role in the world of creation. This is because without motherhood, without the birth of children, and without pregnancies and breastfeeding, the human race would cease to exist.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.